Kamala Harris is almost the Joe Biden of VPs, right? She is the, if you can't come up with something better, that's the one.
Warning. The political trade features probabilities and perspectives about politicians, political parties, political outcomes, and political wagering. The political trade is rated NSFP, not safe for partisans.
Welcome back to The Political Trade, the podcast for people with a passion for politics, probability, and profits. I'm Jeff Joseph, editorial director of Luckbox Magazine, hosting the podcast where conservatives and liberals, Republicans and Democrats, partisans and wingnuts converge to make money betting on politics by trading in the prediction markets at predictit.org, the stock market for politics. And joining us on the show today is the often imitated, never duplicated Predictit super trader, Travis Lloyd, also known as Base Level. Travis is an amazing story, and we look forward to sharing this with you today because he started trading in 2015 with only $50. And after commissions, he's made over $120,000 without any additional deposits. As editors of Luckbox Magazine, part of our job is to verify claims that are made, so we did. And those numbers are true. So we're really thrilled to bring Travis to you. We've heard a lot about him. Took us a while to track him down, but we have him now. And anyone who takes $50 and converts it into $120,000 is worth our attention. So we've personally verified this. If you look at the All Predictors leaderboard for the past year, you'll find Travis in the 63rd position at a 570% ROI. So up ahead, we're going to ask Travis to talk with us about political trends that he's following, share a trading tactic he regularly relies upon to achieve his impressive chart-busting returns, and in our final trade segment, he will walk us through some specific opportunities he likes in the prediction markets right now. So to get the most out of the show, open up predictit.org, click on the markets tab, which is top left, follow along, and as always, leave your political ideologies at the door. And I'm joined by Mike Reddy. Mike is an editor at Luckbox Magazine, a prediction market trader, and the producer of The Political Trade. Mike, I'm also looking forward to this episode because I understand we have an added component to The Political Trade today.
That's right, Jeff. In fact, this is something that A, we should have been doing the whole time, and B, I really hope we continue to do. At Travis's request, we're going to be enjoying some whiskey, or in his case, scotch specifically, as we record this episode, and should be a lot of fun.
Well, you had me at A, so not a pushover when it comes to including brown in any event. So I think this is probably the element that we've needed to move this to the next level, so to the base level. So let's bring him on. Travis, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you both very, very much. It is a pleasure to be here.
So let's talk about those numbers again. $50, no additional deposits, converted to $120,000. After the 10% commission or let's say the 10% profit VIG that Predictit takes out of trading. So running that through a simple calculator, that $119,950 gain is a 240,000% return since inception, or annualized at 470%. They're just crazy, crazy numbers. So I know you're going to share a tactic with us, but how did that all occur? Over how much time did that take to accumulate that profit?
It's actually kind of a funny story. So all of 2015, for the majority, I did terribly. I mean, I was brand new to the site. I was constantly telling myself I should stop and take money out and just leave. So I started with $50. I believe I ended 2015 with somewhere in the vicinity of $400. 2016 was momentous, and I believe over $50,000 occurred in 2016.
Let me stop you there for a moment, because so many of our prior super trader guests in unison have woed 2016. You know, it was a year that everybody was caught off guard. What does that mean? You were on the right side of the general election outcome, the presidential outcome?
Oh, good Lord, no. I lost $12,000 on election day. $12,000.
Absolutely. You still managed a $50,000 return for the year.
After 2016, I have unfortunately just been working too much. And so certainly the numbers have come down from that glorious year. But on the whole, it's still profitable. It's still entertaining as all hell. And, you know, the level of involvement and following along with current events that comes out of necessity of doing this, about having dollars and cents on the line, is really a lot of fun.
And how many hours a week do you think you're spending on the predicted markets at this point?
It is an ungodly amount of time. The amount of time that it exists open on my computer in the background, whether I'm on the call or working on something else, or on my phone in my car while I'm driving, I don't think I should admit, but I will. that is 80 plus hours a week. It is constantly on. How much time am I actively staring at it trading? That's certainly less. Again, I've had to adapt my style of trading, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but to accommodate that I am not there at the drop of a hat at the first time a tweet comes out to catch a scoop, or, you know, to play what we call react it, which is not to predict anything, but to just be the first person when the news hits. I can't be that person anymore. So my time actively trading is, you know, it's certainly in the tens of hours per week. It's probably in the 20s of hours per week, but it's not what it used to be, which was a borderline 24/7 lifestyle.
And how do you find the time to fit in your scotch drinking habit?
I've learned with enough experience, you can drink scotch through almost everything else if you're good enough at both.
Okay, so there's a history here. I understand that you were doing, some calls in the past with predicted traders where you invited everybody to drink along with you, right? Those were called Scotch and Base episodes, is that right?
Yeah, Scotch and Base. They weren't actually calls. They started back in, again, to late 2015, early 2016. There were always people asking tons of questions, from why is the market moving to what should I buy to all sorts of silly things. So the idea was simply, as silly as it was, that I would sit there and drink my way through a question and answer session, and I would announce each time I refilled my glass, so they would know when I was on drink 2 versus drink 7 versus drink whatever, and they would ask questions, and it was just a period of no BS. We would just answer questions.
Well, Mike and I have a great respect for tradition. So in the spirit of those prior sessions, that's what we're doing today. You invited us to do that. So what are you drinking? Well, you asked each of us to bring something to the table. What are you drinking this evening?
I love it. So I am starting right now with a Glenlivet 15, and I've lined up in front of me a course of a few things that we're going to work our way through. Next will be an Aberlour 16, which I happen to absolutely love, and then a younger but delicious Aberfeldy 12. And then, I don't know, if we keep going for a long number of hours past the point when I can tell the difference, I'll just pull out the doers.
All right. Well, I didn't know we were doing flights, but that is an awesome idea. I'm a fan of the Glenlivet 15. I think that's a great everyday scotch to drink. I've been a big fan of the whole Speyside scotch category for quite a long time. Of your flight, the Aberlour, I didn't know that you were bringing that to the table. That is a new favorite of mine. It's really wonderful. I think it's great. Mike, I know you were the one who brought this all together then. So what'd you bring to the table?
Yes, unfortunately, I will not be joining in the scotch drinking. However, I do have a bourbon whiskey I happen to be very fond of. They actually have ads in Luckbox magazine, and, you know, it's sort of my first exposure to them, but few bourbon. The bottle looks beautiful, but the bourbon itself is even more so. I guess what I really like about it is that it's got a real sweet and spicy sort of thing going on there. It's got a warm caramel and cinnamon sort of notes, and God, I don't know. It's definitely one of my new favorites.
All right. Well, I love the fact that you pulled a few, which you gave me a hint some time ago that you might do that. And I love it because Few is not only has advertising pages in our Luckbox magazine, but I know the founder, the distiller, Paul Letko, very well. He lives within a mile of me. His distillery is within a half a mile of my home in Evanston, Illinois. And it's just a great story. Few, F-E-W, is an acronym for Francis, I think it's Eleanor or Elizabeth Willard, who was the head of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, the WCTU, which was based out of Evanston, Illinois. So there's some irony and humor in the name Few, because it's no longer a temperate township. That's for certain. But it's a wonderful bottle, as you said, and more importantly, it's just a wonderful spirit. He's really had some great success with this. It's one of the great craft spirit brands today. It's been really well received and recognized. He's won a lot of awards. I know the mash bill because we used to have monthly poker games over at Few. So that's a 70% corn. It's like 20% northern rye, and there's some malt. I don't know how much, and it's got this deep reddish color. Few is a wonderful bourbon, so I think it's a great choice. Have you ever had that, by the way?
No, I haven't. As you mentioned, and I was actually Googling it. I'm on their website. I would definitely try their straight rye. Bourbon traditionally for me is just a little too sweet for my taste, but a lot of bourbon makers do make a straight rye whiskey, and I often, it's sort of a guilty pleasure. I can't, admit it in many circles. I love a good rye whiskey. I need a little bit more ice in that, but my goodness, I love them.
That is my favorite skew of theirs is the rye. I've introduced Scott Supak, our mutual friend and a longtime friend of the Political Trade podcast, to Sazerac Rye. Mike and I have sent him a bottle not too long ago, and it's become part of his daily routine. Well, I know we have more important things to do, like how you got to manage a 240,000% return, but in your honor, I will mention that I pulled out a bottle of Uskaba. This is not a typical daily drink of mine. It's a very special bottle. It was from the 2016 special release that they did. Only 4,000 bottles were made around the world, and I was able to snag one of them. And it's Uskaba is a kind of longtime favorite. This is a cask strength, and it's about 57% ABV, and it's a blend. And I'm okay with it because the average age expression is between 10 and 21 years, and it is extraordinary. I think it's my most prized bottle that is open right now. And I managed to keep it on the shelf for about 2 years already, 3 years.
And I'm
trying to savor the last drops a bit, but that's what I am pouring right now. So here we go. All right, let's get to work here. You wanted to speak, we always open our episodes just talking about the current market and what political events have occurred. And you wanted to speak to the Lincoln Project and some of the impact it's having on key Senate races. And you have some specific ones. And I was really happy to hear that because the Lincoln Project is a topic that's of real interest to me. They've been running ads. I think if you don't know what the Lincoln Project is, it's political consultant Steve Schmidt, who guided John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign to a loss, and then quickly repaid his old boss by relating unflattering confidences to the authors of a gossipy campaign book. So it's Steve Schmidt and it's Rick Wilson, who was the creator of the campaign ad questioning the patriotism of Senator Max Cleland. And then it's George Conway. So it's Schmidt, Wilson, and Conway. It's an unlikely trio. Of course, George Conway is a project advisor and Politico, but he's, of course, married to Kellyanne Conway, who is a counselor to Trump. So that is the kind of the DNA of the Lincoln Project. They've been putting together really slick ads that have gotten a lot of attention. We'll speak to their efficacy in a moment because that remains in question. But I think we have some clips to share.
Nixon was bad. Trump is worse. Now, Trump saves Roger Stone. Stone lied to cover up Russian involvement in Trump's campaign to protect Donald Trump. 7 felony convictions.
I am the law and order candidate.
Trump is the most corrupt president in U.S. history. There's only one way to end the Trump crime spree. Throw him and his crooks out of office.
Now, that's a recent ad, a very recent ad from the Lincoln Project, and they're creating these beautifully executed ads with the intention to go viral. And there, as I said, there's some criticism from both the left and the right about the actual efficacy of the ads, but you wanted to speak to their impact or potential impact on some key Senate races. So what were your thoughts here? I know that you wanted to speak to the Susan Collins race.
Mm. I think what's interesting is, you know, the Lincoln Project came out a couple months ago and really got obviously widespread release beyond Twitter for their Morning in America, MOURNING. It really was just last week that they came out and announced that they are going to work down ballot. And there was a bit of a, I don't want to call it uproar, but certainly a renewed uproar from the GOP camp, from the Republican side, that not only how dare you spend all of this time going after our headliner, but you're going to go down ballot? What, like, there was just a bit of a backlash. It was very interesting. I think the most important part of it is these are a number of people that they have a history of certainly making some very successful negative campaign ads, which is something that historically, we know Democrats are simply not as good at. The Republican side has always done a better job wielding and clubbing people with fear through campaign ads or through mailers or what have you. And all of a sudden, you have a little bit of that magic, if you will, being applied not just back towards the GOP, but down ballot, which it brought up a bunch of things. It was very interesting to watch the reaction online when they came out and said, first it was obviously sort of broad strokes of just let's hit across the spectrum of the GOP. Obviously, they did something after the impeachment vote in the Senate targeting just the GOP Senate as a whole. But to announce that they're going to jump into local media markets specifically to campaign against down ballot candidates is just fascinating to me.
Well, it's a fascinating topic and a really timely one, literally about an hour or two before we started recording this. So today, Ben Howe, who came of age politically making anti-Obama ads during the rise of the Tea Party, he has been recently referred to in a Vanity Fair article as the creative mind of the Lincoln Project. And just today, he had to... I didn't grab the full story, but today he had to resign from the Lincoln Project for misogynist, anti-feminist comments that referred to women's body parts in derogatory manners. And that just happened within the last hour or two. So they've gotten a little bit of publicity on that. And then the Center for Responsive Politics, the campaign finance watchdog group, wrote that the Lincoln Project is hiding some of its vendors by stealthily paying its subcontractors, making it kind of difficult to follow the money. So they've reported that of the nearly $1.4 million that has been spent through March by the Lincoln Project, almost all of that money has been going to the group's board members and the firms run by them. So they're certainly getting a lot of attention, but their ads are really beautiful. And I have to admit, they're kind of poignant. Now, today, I took a look at Twitter. They have 1.4 million followers on the Lincoln Project, and that's the primary dissemination platform for sending their ads out. And, you know, that's not really a material number. I was looking at other influencers in that range of followers, and you have your assorted makeup and fashion model and CrossFit bloggers, you know, at 1.4 million followers. Kanye West, for example, our new presidential candidate, perhaps, has 30 million followers, right? So there's a real question as to how much impact. I'm going to throw this back to you, but there's a statement that the New Republic, which wrote a story just about 3 or 4 days ago on the Lincoln Project, and said that the Lincoln Project's own tactics suggest that the PAC strategists know that they have little chance of persuading anyone. Their audience is liberals who are delighted to see Republicans roast the president. Instead, they have focused on attracting the ire of the president, which in turn brings in attention and money. So the New Republic, which was really questioning who, you know, where the Lincoln Project is having its greatest impact. So I know you wanted to look at some of these races. Any thoughts on, you know, the impact that they're actually having in Maine or in South Carolina or in or in Iowa?
As far as the advocacy of them, to date, their primary target, in my opinion at least, has been an audience of one. Their entire purpose to this point has been to troll the president, which is fine. It's relatively useless, other than entertaining. I think what is interesting to me and what is different is their announcement last week that they are going to enter down ballot races and identified a handful of states that they're going to enter. We haven't seen what they're going to do or what they're bringing to the table. All we've seen is a very targeted sort of Twitter-centric focus to get exactly what's happening. We're talking about them. People are retweeting them. They may only have 1.4 million followers, but most of their videos cross a million views within 3 to 4 days. Every one of their videos. I think the point of this was, on its face, appears foolish, right? I can't believe you're spending all of this money and all you're doing is advertising on Fox News in DC during Fox and Friends. Really? You're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that? But they made their splash in the headlines. They got the attention. And that's why last week is important. Last week, they said, we are now going down ballot. That's going to be very different.
And that's truly an unprecedented move to have a Republican-based organization going against Republicans. And they listed the senators that they're targeting include McConnell in Kentucky, Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Cory Gardner in Colorado, McSally in Arizona, Cruz in Texas, Ernst in Iowa, Rubio in Florida, Susan Collins in Maine. And the list goes on. Tom Cotton, Mike Rounds.
They went after everybody with a household name, and a household's probably a little bit generous, but anyone with, you know, who follows somewhat politics, they're going after those names.
Well, I think that the one that I would watch most closely would probably be in Iowa. You know, Greenfield is leading Ernst by low single digits in the last four consecutive 538 polls. I think Ernst is 49 cents right now for the Republican to take that Senate seat. That's the closest race I can think of that it will be a good test to see what impact that they have.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to have a hard time seeing truly what their impact was, right? Because obviously we're sort of have something of an unprecedented election. I mean, it's not unprecedented. I'm sure that's said about every election, but it certainly feels unprecedented with the level of disapproval going into this election. Plus the pandemic we're dealing with. What the effect Lincoln Project actually has on some of these, it's going to be tough to discern exactly. But I do think what they bring to the table is a history and a list of experience, specifically of speaking to a kind of populace that a lot of Democratic political consultants had a bit harder of a time reaching. If we are talking about states that have historically gone GOP, in at least their state or national but non-presidential elections, and these are the people who've been involved in those campaigns. They won a lot of small and then slightly larger statewide and even national campaigns before they got a shot at the presidency. And for the most part, those were all GOP campaigns in predominantly GOP states. So what they actually do bring to the table that we're just not seeing is really a better understanding of how to reach those people. And again, I don't know what it's going to do. I'm just very interested to watch.
Well, it's an interesting week because I can think of three occurrences right off the top of to see the impact that some of these media and political operatives will actually have on the media platforms or political campaigns that they're working on. So you have Ben Howe, who is supposedly the creative genius behind all the ads thus far from the Lincoln Project, which I think have been beautiful ads, really well executed and somewhat provocative, right? And then you have, I forget his name, but the lead writer for Tucker Carlson, who just left a couple of days ago. So we'll see if his monologue will continue to have its same sting. And then today was a big event with Barry Weiss, who resigned pretty dramatically from the op-ed board at the New York Times with a stinging resignation letter, speaking to the lack of intellectual diversity and on the New York Times op-ed board. And this is three examples of kind of media shakeups in the political world and we'll see what impact they actually have.
Yeah, that was quite the White's resignation letter was quite, that was quite something, right?
It was quite a letter. I mentioned to a colleague today that it's hard to imagine a company that's had a worse press year in terms of their reputation than the New York Times, regardless of where you stand politically. They've just had too many miscues. Somebody needs to take control of that platform in a number of different ways.
Oh, yeah, no, I certainly agree with that. We could go for an hour about that, but I probably shouldn't. So,
maybe I shouldn't either, but maybe you should have another drink. Well, let's move on. I know that, you know, the other big news story, of course, is the commutation of Roger Stone. It's a market that you wanted to speak to. So what are your thoughts on that? And I think more specifically, what do we take from the commutation that we can apply to some of the other clemency markets that exist unpredicted right now?
So let's go backwards first. I think what we take away at the end of this market having resolved is that the current president will withhold to the absolute last moment until he absolutely has to do something that requires him to put his name to paper as the person that did the thing. So if that means that Bill Barr or his Justice Department can handle it for him, God bless him. If it's something that Pompeo and the State Department can wipe away or expunge, fantastic. But absolutely, when all other options are exhausted, that's when, if push comes to shove, he'll put his name to paper. And it is fascinating because he let many other people actually go to jail, right? Paul Manafort has been in jail. And I think he got compassionate release 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago for, not compassionate release, but he was allowed to go home with a home monitor because of COVID. Lord knows what reason. But Stone happened on, not quite, but essentially, the eve of his having to report to prison. It certainly tells us something in terms of how to watch for other markets from a timeline perspective, right? You can play a predictive market where you're going, I know the answer to that. So I'm going to buy it right now. And I'm going to buy everything I can afford to buy. And that is that, you know, Stone is going to be pardoned. And you know, when that market opened, you could have sat there and said, absolutely, this president will pardon that man, right? Period. What's the current price for yes? I don't know. 55 cents. Give me all you got. I'll take it.
Perhaps an indication of that is that he is so vertically integrated in his decision-making process. He is judge, jury, and executioner, also the audience and the media critic, as evident from some of the self-congratulatory remarks he made just recently, Mike.
It's a terrible thing. And this is an investigation that they said should have ended before it started. It shouldn't have started. And if it did, it should have ended immediately because they found, as you know, as well as I do, they found nothing initially, but it went on for 2 years or longer. And I'm getting rave reviews for what I did for Roger Stone. And
he's getting rave reviews. So I think what I'm taking from your comments here is we get a lot of telegraphing from this president as to where his mind is. So it gives you a lot to work with when you have two other clemency markets that are on the table right now.
No, and again, he certainly is willing to step up to the plate and cover as when necessary. But I just think that what we've seen from him in this demonstration is that if there is any option in his mind to not have to be the person to step out front and take it, that he'll opt for that instead.
Well, I recall that we had Anthony Scaramucci on the podcast a couple months back, and we asked him this question, and he said specifically that he thought that Roger Stone had a lot on Trump and that there was a better than 50-50 chance that he would be pardoned. So he felt pretty good about this outcome as well. And I know we're going to revisit this when we get to the trade segment coming up. So we'll move on. So I think we're going to take a quick break right now. I've got to refill my glass as well. I know you have to move on to your second flight. We're going to take a quick break, but in a moment, Travis is going to walk through a trading tactic that he uses on a regular basis to achieve his impressive returns. So stick around. We'll be right back. We're back with Travis Lloyd for the tactics segment of the show. We've been enjoying our time with Travis thus far, but now it's really time we learn something about the man who took $50 and turned it into $120,000. So he has a lesson for us. And the lesson is about trading the yes side of high velocity markets. That's how he summed up this strategy for us, trading the yes side of high velocity markets. Travis, I'm not so clear on what that means. So take us to school. We're all ears.
So I will do my best here. Predicted markets way back when were all binary. They were yes or no. And then they introduced bracketed markets. And the focus became very quickly the what we call negative risk, betting on the no side across a number of brackets. And I won't go into that too in detail because I know it was just 2 weeks ago, maybe three, that Scott Supak was on. And he gave a fantastic explanation of how to trade. Right. So negative risk, you got that. Listen, two episodes ago, you get that story. I'm here to argue that that's wonderful, but it's really low profit and it's a lot of work. And if you don't have time for that, you trade the yes side. You have a couple of different types of traders who exist on the ecosystem of predicted, right? You have their day traders who live here. They breathe here. They're here every day. They're churning things for 1 or 2 cents. You get people who are moving for a little bit more long-term strategies. Derek Phillips, DMP, classic 400 to 400,000, right? And then you get people who are playing the negative risk, like Supak. What you need is the kind of market that attracts all three of those people. You need all of them there. When you bring all of those traders involved, then you have a constant number of shares trading hands, right? It's always moving. So what I like to do, I think of each of these multi-bracketed markets as somewhat like a multiple choice test. And your job is to rule out a couple of obvious no's, right? Now, plenty of people like Scott Supak would tell you to go and buy a ton of no. And that's probably fine. It's somewhat safe. In terms of if you have an unlimited amount of capital and you want to just absolutely max that, but I don't touch those. I just don't, right? If you're trading at 98 cents or 97 cents, you're getting 2 cents on 97 or 98 or whatever you're getting. One flip against your favor erases how many times of doing that. It's not worth it. I don't play in those markets. So what I do is I jump into these markets and you rule out the ones that we can obviously just go, that's not happening. And then you start buying the yeses.
Let me step back a little bit just because I want to make sure we walk through a kind of an actionable format for our listeners to really understand what you're saying here. So clearly, I think that's a great point that you illustrate. That negative risk, that strategy, while profitable, is cumbersome and it has risks associated with it because of the small increments that you can pick up, even though you can multiply it by 5 or 6 different no contracts, picking up 2 to 10 cents. It does have some exposure and it's a lot of work. You have a different approach where you look to a market with high volume trading that has multiple yes bracket opportunities, and you start buying yeses. What do you look for in those yeses, and how many do you purchase? And are you holding these yeses to outcome, or are you looking to trade them? So speak more to the specifics of the strategy,
the mechanics,
and how you execute it. Yes,
I'm never holding that expiration. Almost never. I don't hold that expiration. I don't have. I can't be around to be right. So what I've learned is I need to predict what the market wants to do, not what the end result is going to be, right? It's like taking the second derivative off of the markets. So VP is a fantastic example. Kamala Harris has spent the last 3 to 4 weeks at 50 cents. Now, you can sit here and opine that Kamala Harris is almost the Joe Biden of VPs, right? She is the, if you can't come up with something better, that's the one. And so Kamala Harris is the person up there that we have constant daily barrage of the case for this person and the case for this person. But they all take turns moving up and down. And this sort of, in the lack thereof of an official winning there, it's Kamala. So Kamala lives at 50 cents. Now, here we are having this conversation, and finally, someone pierced the Kamala veil, and she's down to 40 cents, which is amazing. But it's only because we have had 3 separate simultaneous drives of other candidates up. So take that aside for a second. Let's back up. You walk into a market, Kamala Harris is commanding 50%. The majority of the other, 32 names in the market are all trading at 1 to 2 cents. So you can rule out, take all of those 1 to 2 cents, screw it, let's take out 1 to 3. Take them all out. Then take out Kamala Harris. What you're left with is a handful of people between, 5, 6 cents and 15 cents.
So let's use that market right now. You take out Kamala Harris at 41 cents. That leaves Susan Rice at 23, Tammy Duckworth at 14, Val Demings at 10, and Elizabeth Warren at 6. So that's the universe you're starting with?
Yeah, I would say this is a fantastic example to start with. So we start at the top. Kamala Harris, 40 cents, too high. Why is she going to go back to 50? Right? There's really no reason to go back to 50. You really only have a downside there, right? Even if she's the winner, you have 4 to 5 weeks to play around before you jump on board. So let's just set her aside for a second and move on. Susan Rice. Susan Rice is the only person over 20. Why is she over 20? I can't think of a possible reason. You could buy no based on that, but why would you pay 78 cents if you're wrong, right? At the end of the day, Joe Biden makes this choice. So see, I just move past that. Let's just skip both of them. They're too expensive to buy no, and there's not enough upside to buy yes, because I'm not trying to predict the winner. I just need to make money in the next week or so. If you're playing in the realm of 5 cents for Karen Bass, 7 cents for Elizabeth Warren, 10 cents for Val Demings, or 15 for Tammy Duckworth, you don't have a lot of room to fall. Tammy Duckworth is not going to come out tomorrow and say, by the way, I'd like to remove my name from consideration for VP. So we're not actually predicting the results. What I need is the price that I purchase a share at. I need that to move 5 cents. I'd like it to move 10, but I need it to move 5. The idea is you rule out the obvious things you don't care about. Even if you're so obvious that you're like, oh, let me buy the no on that. Pick the 3 or 4 most likely yeses. And when I say most likely, I mean most likely to have any activity in the next week or two. To some extent, what you're doing is playing the market's reaction.
So let me summarize that, because I've been following along and I hear you loud and clear. So this comes from a basis of being looking for an alternative to negative risks. You're a little bit negative on negative risk, and Mike and I deal in the world of headlines. So I think that might be one of them. So, oh, by the way, you also coined a great campaign slogan for Kamala, which I jotted down while you were speaking. And that is Kamala Harris. If you can't come up with something better. So thank you for that. But the rest of your premise is this. First of all, it's identifying low price and low risk. Rule out the obvious. Don't bet on the outcome. Pick the 3 or 4 that are most likely to be in the mix, and be focused on things that are well priced, which is why you threw out Harris in the illustration of using the VP market, because she's high priced. Mm-hmm. And you seem to be very, very price adverse. And what you're doing here is just showing the benefit of owning multiple yeses, because you're not betting on the outcome. You're just betting on a pop, on things that are priced low enough that have the opportunity for a little bit of upside.
Yes. Just give me some movement.
If you were to summarize your looking back at your trading history, what percentage, and I know you don't know this specifically, but what percentage of you think your overall return would be attributed to this particular strategy?
I want to say a third, a half might be generous, but somewhere between a third and a half.
Obviously, considering the numbers you're talking about, that's a very significant amount. And it's true. And what you're finding is the kind of arbitrage between betting on the political outcome, which is forecasting, or the other extreme, which is a strategy that's purely artificial, which is negative risk, which is a exploitation arbitrage strategy. And you're kind of in the middle. This is a little bit of Derek Phillips in that it's event-based and you'll trade on news, but you're also willing to have tranches of multiple yeses.
So I'm so glad you brought up arbitrage, because that's actually a fantastic point about how PI came to exist. You got to go back into the history, right? Negative risk in the very beginning profited off the idea that people buying yes side were chasing profits, right? Chasing profits is, I think it's worth 60. I can't get 60, but I can get 62. You know what? I'll pay 2 more cents. What's 2 more cents, right? Next guy comes along. I can't pay 62. I wanted to pay 60, but I can pay 63. What's 3 cents, right? They pay a little more. In the very beginning, the negative riskers were on the receiving end of that benefit, right? They're getting all of these people paying 2 cents, 3 cents, 4 cents more than they thought they should. As negative risk has become more prolific and more profitable, if you will, you have more people showing up to play negative risk than you have buying positive. And the people buying positive are playing not predicted, but reacted. And the only people that get screwed in that story are all of the neg riskers who were waiting to complete that bracket.
And the people that benefit by that strategy are those who own multiple yes contracts in a bracketed market.
Correct.
Like you, yeah.
It's not about trading the market in terms of what the outcome is. When you suddenly see that the majority of volume has moved to one side or the other of the trading arena, then you stand to benefit more from being on the opposite side of that. That's it.
We get it, and now we understand the strategy. And it's a great antidote to all the negative riskers out there. So, but we are going to hold you to the notion that there are some outcomes that you have your eye on. So that's what we're going to do when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to walk Travis into the trading pit for his perspective on some specific predicted markets. But first,
want a little more luck in your life? Get Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability, named the best new magazine of 2019. Luckbox is a must-read for side hustlers, gamblers, entrepreneurs, and active investors. Each issue features best bets from prediction market experts, as well as timely sports wagering, stocks, options, futures, and cryptocurrency trading ideas. You can buy Luckbox on newsstands, but with this special offer, listeners of The Political Trade can receive a 10-issue digital subscription absolutely free. Just visit getluckbox.com to receive the award-winning magazine right in your inbox. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox for free today. Learn more at getluckbox.com.
Well, welcome back to The Political Trade with Super Trader Travis Lloyd. Remember, we're going to walk through trades right now with Travis, but keep in mind that when we discuss a contract's price unpredicted, it's synonymous with what the market forecasts the probability of that specific outcome to be. So a contract trading at 17 cents, for example, implies a 17% probability of that outcome. And keep that in mind when we walk through. Percentage and cents are interchangeable in this discussion. But we asked Travis, the man who put together $120,000 worth of profit and a 240,000% return, to come up with some trades to share with our listeners. So he has three. So Travis, what is the first market that we should pull up?
First market that I would love you to pull up is the VP market, the VP VEEP stakes, as we call it.
Okay, so that's who will win the 2020 Democratic vice presidential nomination. That's a market that we just used to illustrate the trading tactic of buying multiple yeses. Currently, as we mentioned earlier in the segment, Kamala Harris is at around 40 cents. Susan Rice is around 24. Tammy Duckworth, 14%, Val Demings, 10%, Elizabeth Warren, 7%, Karen Bass at 5%. Those are our front runners right now in that market. It's a highly traded market. Almost 60 million shares have traded. You have a specific play in this market. What are you looking at?
Okay, so what I'm most looking at, again, because my method is not to predict the winner, but just to predict someone who has staying power, I'm looking at Tammy Duckworth. Tammy Duckworth is not going anywhere. She's just going to be in the running. And because she's in the running, there will be, in my opinion, another article or two that pops up that says she is the front runner or who knows what. I, this morning, was thankful enough to pick up a couple more shares at 13 cents, which was a fantastic buy, in my opinion, because I have every expectation that at some point in the next 2 weeks, she'll hit 20 cents.
So you're not predicting the outcome here, but you're trading. Your trade is Tammy Duckworth at 14 cents.
My trade is buy Tammy Duckworth. If you can get it at 13 to 14 cents, buy some, set some sales for 20. Be safe, right? a fantastic trader always told me, sell it for 2 cents less than you think it's worth.
Tammy Duckworth. 13.14 for the next market. Well, there you go. For the next the next market, we're going to move you into Maine. You asked us to take a look at the Maine Senate race. Which party will win the U.S. Senate election in Maine in 2020? It's a simple market. It's the Democrats are trading at 71 cents. The Republicans at 32 cents. You have a trade there. What do you like?
Okay, this is the exception to the rule. I love this market. I absolutely love Susan Collins to lose. I am a born and bred New Englander. Thank you. I am born and bred a New Englander. I spent my summers in Maine. Susan Collins is not going to win. And I never, ever, ever hold anything to fruition. I just don't. And yet, here I am constantly, probably, possibly to my detriment. I continue to buy Susan Collins no every opportunity I have, anytime it drops below 50 cents. I just keep buying more. I would just say buy as many Susan Collins no's as you possibly can, because there's just no way.
Of course, the Democratic primary is right now in this
it
evening
is.
As we are speaking. And of course, Collins has raised about $16 million. You know, the four-term senator is certainly a household name in the state with a reputation for independence and a state that has a reputation for voting independently. But Democrats are battering her over her support of Kavanaugh in 2018. Gideon's up by 4 in the latest public policy poll. Collins is up by 8 in another poll that came out on July 2nd. So it looks like a tight race, but we have a strong bet by you, and it is by nose on Susan Collins. Is that right?
It is. I think what she's done in the last year is shed any semblance of an independent label that she has clung to and successfully used for a decade. Maine will reject her for that. That's it.
Well, let's move on to your final trade pick, which is, will Trump grant clemency to Michael Flynn in his first term? And of course, this is such a timely market to look at, because he just granted clemency to Roger Stone. Right now, the yeses are trading at 30 cents or 30% for Trump to grant clemency to Michael Flynn in the first term. The noes are 71 cents. What's your pick?
If you simply are looking at the Flynn pardon and clemency, going back to what we talked about when we were talking about Stone, I believe what Trump has demonstrated is an absolute level of unwillingness to put his name to anything, if at all possible, right? So currently what he's done in the Flynn case is he has sicked Barr on the case to come up with a resolution from within the Justice Department that doesn't require Trump to put his name to anything. And that's currently what they're working on. In either case, this won't be the end of the story. And I'm a big fan of jumping into markets in very high volume, 5,000-10,000 shares, of things that are not done. Because as soon as news breaks, the markets have a tendency to over-exaggerate to a level of completion that is not actually reality, right? You have a series of traders fighting to compete for shares that they believe are worth a dollar, and they often end up overbidding one another, and they're overpaying for something that's not actually a done transaction. So I like to be on the other side of that.
So it kind of plays in line with your strategy that you discussed earlier, where you have a low price option. In this case, it's the yes at 30 cents, where you don't have a lot of downside, but there's a lot of runway to resolution. And that gives you an opportunity for a lot of news events that can be impact the short-term trading outcome. Is that fair to say?
No, that's very fair to say. So, I mean, I have somewhere in the vicinity of 1,200 or 1,300 shares of Will Flynn be pardoned that I got at an aggregate of 11 cents. And right now, as I click on this market, the last trade was 30 cents. I think that either the en banc will be granted, or it will be sidestepped specifically to appeal for a SCOTUS consideration. And in either case, it will go somewhere near 50 cents. Again, let's talk about the rule. You always sell for less than you think it's worth. I'm a big believer that I can absolutely sell every one of these shares at about 40 cents all day long.
So will Trump grant clemency to Michael Flynn in his first term? The answer is you don't care, but you think at current levels, at 30 cents, you can get 40 cents out of it. Is that fair?
That's very fair. Hit the bell.
These are all great trading ideas. And of course, for those of you who don't already have an account at Predictit, you should. And we have $20 for you. You can take advantage of the trade shared by Travis by going to predictit.org/promo/TPT20. Sign up, deposit $20, and we'll match that first $20 that you deposited. And you just simply go to predictit.org/promo/TPT20, deposit 20, and you'll have 40 to trade with. It's that simple to sign up and trade along. So we're going to take a quick break and a really quick break. But when we come back, we're going to be asking Travis for this week's lockbox trade. We'll be right back. Most gamblers and traders know a lockbox is an undeserving recipient of a favorable outlier outcome. And fans of political rhetoric will remember the term lockbox, which Al Gore popularized along with the help of SNL cast member Daryl Hammond in his 2000 presidential run.
I would put it in what I call a lockbox.
And by the way, Travis, I like that better than the bell. But in our lockbox segment, we ask our guests, and today it's Travis, to identify a current predicted trade that looks like a lock or a sure thing. And remember, it's a trade. It's not necessarily an outcome. And knowing that Travis is less concerned with outcomes, I think this fits in perfectly with the strategy. Of course, anything can happen on a lockbox. Bet responsibly. But Travis, which market should we turn to for today's lockbox trade?
I will start by saying I always sell at 90 cents. I don't buy 92 cents items that are quote unquote guaranteed, because after spending this many years on Predicted, I have watched enough 99 cent markets flip. So my version of a lockbox is going to be a little bit different. And I'm perhaps a little bit weird here, and I'll probably catch a tremendous amount of derision for this. But my pick here is in the market of which of these 13 members of Trump's cabinet will leave next. That is going to be the closest thing to my version of a lockbox. I believe the answer is Mark Esper. I don't know that he'll be out next, to be perfectly honest. But I do think that there will be sometime in the next 2 months or so, because we have plenty of time, that there will be a story that hits of some sort or another that he has demonstrated just enough disloyalty to the president that we will hear that the president is considering firing him. We've already gotten there once. I'm simply saying we will get there again in the next 2 months.
Let's look at the lay of the land in that market. The numbers are Alex Azar, the director of Health and Human Services, is at 41 cents. Mark Esper is the next name at 18 cents, but it's way down there. And of course, William Barr's after at 10 cents and Pompeo at 7 cents. Nobody expects those names would be out next. But your point, and the point you reiterated throughout this session, is that with long runway to go at 18 cents, there's plenty of room for some upside here, particularly in light of the fact that just recently, just earlier last week, Secretary of Defense Esper confirmed that he had been briefed on information regarding Russian payments to the Taliban, the so-called Russian bounty story. That alone is the type of thing, if that were to happen again, is likely to move the market. So
I believe you will hit 40 cents, that this market will move his name to 40 cents. That's it. And anything under 17, 16 cents, I keep buying.
Mark Esper at 18 cents in the market. Which of these 13 members of Trump's cabinet will leave next as a lockbox trade with upside and that outcome in mind? So that's fantastic. Travis, this has been a lot of fun having you on. You added a fun dimension to this, which I think may become a mainstay. We'll have to see if that works out, But of course, you could and you should follow Travis on Twitter at Base from PI. That's Base from PI, as in Predictit. And follow him on Twitter. He's pretty prolific there. Travis, thank you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys so much. This has been, I can't even tell you how much entertaining and fun this has been.
Thank you again, Travis. And that's going to wrap up today's episode. Thank you for tuning in to The Political Trade. Tell your friends about us and make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, check out thepoliticaltrade.com to sign up for the newsletter, find us on social media, or send us a message. It's all there at thepoliticaltrade.com. Mike, any other announcements?
Just one, Jeff. We're going to be closing on a brand new issue of Luckbox Magazine next week. It's going to feature another article from super trader Derek Phillips. So look forward to that. That's all I got.
That's wonderful. Well, this is Jeff Joseph.
And I'm Mike Reddy.
And remember to believe in math, master your trade, and join us next time on The Political Trade.